Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, Episode 8. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Feliz Navidad!
It is our Christmas episode. We have a trio of things.
Christmas movies.
Sure.
We brought an extra gift, an extra lump of coal for you for Christmas.
Yeah. But, I'm getting some reverb there, Jeff.
From me?
Yeah, I'm getting some echo.
I don't know what to do.
Nope, it's gone now.
Okay.
No, it's back. All right, we'll see how it turns out. All right.
I could do...
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Hopefully this does not sound like shit for those that are listening. That is working.
Well, I muted myself.
Yeah, so. I saw. Like, I don't know how well that's going to work. But anyway, we have a trio of films to review tonight. But before we get into that, Jeff, what have you been watching?
Well, sir, I'll just touch on a couple new movies I've seen. Am I echoing for you?
No, you're not echoing for me. It's when I talk to you.
Oh. All right. Yeah, I've seen a couple. I'll just throw out a couple new movies that I've seen. And I guess I'll start with the horror movie of the bunch, and that's a film called The Wolf of Snow Hollow, which just came out. You could rent on VOD. Chris, is this movie on your fucking radar?
I've not heard of this.
Okay. Put it on your radar right now. It's one of the best movies of the year, I think.
What you said it's on VOD?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a $6 rental. Worth it. I actually watched it twice in my rental period. It is a horror comedy with kind of a Christmassy vibe. Christmas/New Year's vibe. Like, it takes place during that part of the year. And it is about a cop who is a recovering alcoholic, and he's trying to keep it together, like not lose his shit, as a werewolf terrorizes his town. It stars this guy, this actor Jim Cummings. He's like also the writer and director, so like this is his movie. And the dude has this kind of like manic energy to him. Kind of, I don't know. I wouldn't say exactly like Jim Carrey, but something in that vein.
Okay.
Where it's like, is this guy going to snap at any second? Like, he's got that, you know, kind of, he's very good at like shouting and going crazy. But, you know, the whole joke is him like trying to like act normal and nice and as just like, you know, people are getting killed in his town. People are blaming him. Everyone he talks to is giving him stupid conspiracy theories like werewolves and UFOs and all this shit. It's a really, I don't know. I think it does a really good balance of the comedy and the horror. You know, it has like some human elements to it to go along with the horror. The horror is never really like, you know, it's never like super scary or intense or anything. It has like a light, fun vibe to it. But I just think it does a good job of mixing like the human story, like the drama and the comedy and the horror. Like, it's just a good blend. Like, this guy is on my radar now. I actually want to go back and see his first movie, which is called Thunder Road, which I don't think is a horror movie. I think it's just like a indie drama comedy thing. But this is his second movie, and he did a really good job. He's getting some notice for it, and I was like surprised by how much I like this, especially like when you think like I'm not super big into like horror comedies. Like, I usually don't like them, but
yeah, you're not a fan of them normally.
But this does a good job, and it has a little bit of a holiday vibe to it. The werewolf, I think, actually looks pretty cool in it for what it is. Yeah, this is worth a rental. I'd say check it out.
All right.
other brand new movie I saw and rented is called Unhinged. Have you seen trailers for this one, the Russell Crowe movie where he's like 300 pounds?
Yeah, it reminded me of Falling Down.
Yep, it's exactly like that. It's like a totally like trashy kind of straight, almost straight to video Falling Down movie.
Got it.
But just, you know, kind of bolstered by this absolutely insane rage case performance from Russell Crowe. Like, he's just seething rage in it. And, you know, it's a very, like, dumb and kind of, like, mean-spirited movie. But, like, you know, if you watch the trailer for it and you're like, that looks like a fun time, it, like, lives up to what it's selling you. So, like, if you're in the mood for that type of movie, which I was, like, you know, I think I rented it last week, I was just like, I want something that's just dumb and fun. And this, like, fit that bill. Like, it's, believe me, it's no masterpiece, but I had a lot of fun with Unhinged. Yeah, it's exactly what you think it's going to be from seeing the trailer. But just, he's just such a fucking, like, so over the top, like, with his rage and his violence. Like, the lengths he goes because someone, like, honked at him in traffic is just fucking ridiculous. But yeah, I enjoyed Unhinged. You know, I can see, like, the negative reviews that it gets, but, like, I don't know, if you're in the mood for that, I think it totally, like, nails it.
Every once in a while, you just want to, like, you just want to reach out and strangle some people.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a fun, trashy movie in that vein. Like, if you want to vicariously release some rage, Unhinged, yeah. You could do worse than Unhinged, so... I think I'm going to leave it at that, Chris.
All right. I have not seen much of anything over the past month. No new films. I do have a couple set up, New Mutants and Possessor, ready to watch, but haven't seen them yet. I've just been watching The Mandalorian and that. So,
yeah, I'm caught up on The Mandalorian. I'm enjoying it. Just as much as I always have. I don't know. Like, I don't expect... The Mandalorian is a show I demand very little of, and it delivers exactly... Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like... I want a fun adventure of the week, and I always get a fun adventure of the week.
Yeah, and that's how I approach it, too. Like, that's all I want out of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's, like, an overarching plot or whatever, and it's fine, tied in every once in a while.
Yeah.
But... Like, I think some of the complaints that people are throwing at it, like, because they want it to be...
They want it to... The people want, it, like, the lore, and you know what I mean? They want it to be fleshing out the Star Wars story. And
I think we've been spoiled over the last, like, decade with serialized television.
Yeah.
And
this is a 90s TV show. It's fucking great. It's, like, totally... I don't know. Like, it's totally what it's trying to be and totally what I want of it, you know?
Exactly. Like, that's what I love about it. And it's like, I don't need them to shrink Star Wars smaller than it already is. Like, just let this be an adventure out on the on the fringes that happens to be in Star Wars, but it's just a bounty hunter, you know, protecting this kid.
Yeah, I'm just like, what trouble is he going to get into this up? Like, what side quest is he going to do this episode?
Yeah.
And they're always like, you know, it's always like kind of clever. Like, the action is kind of clever. Like, the thing is, like, I really like the premiere where it was, he's helping this town that was run by Timothy Oliphant, and they had to, like, go blow up the giant fucking sandworm thing. It was funny too, because like how they ended up finally killing it is how I said to kill it in the very fucking first place. And they wasted like all this firepower trying other shit. Like, oh, we're gonna line up like a line of bombs. I'm like, just fucking strap it to one of the fucking things and have them eat the thing. You know, and that's what ended up. I think that's how they got them.
Yeah, they ultimately got it to eat the bantha and blow it up.
That was like I thought they were gonna do like right away, and then I'm like, why are they burying? Oh, they're gonna try to like get it like under its belly. Okay,
like that's the kind of lore stuff I like, though. Is like, you know, like, so that creature they fight, the Curate Dragon, it's the sound that Obi-Wan makes when he saves Luke at the beginning of the first movie. So it's like, that's the type of shit that, like, all right, we've never seen one of them before. Like, oh, that's what it is. It's this giant fucking nasty ass worm, that, like, sandworm. That's cool. Like, I don't need the other shit.
Yeah. By the way, I did see Possessor as well. I forgot to mention that. I don't know why, because I thought Possessor was great. Like, it feels like it's Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son.
Yep.
It feels like a Cronenberg, and very violent and gory, but also a cool story about, like, a kind of like about an assassin played by Andrea Riseborough, who the chick from Mandy. Mm-hmm. She's like this assassin who takes over people's bodies, and you could implant yourself in someone else's mind, control their body, and then she does that to go kill people anonymously. But this body she takes over, his brain starts fighting back, and just really, like, beyond, like, the gore and the Cronenberg aesthetics of it, like cool sci-fi ideas in it, controlling someone else's body like that, like a puppet, but then what if the puppet fights back, like, it starts to infect your brain, like, remotely. Like, it's really cool sci-fi ideas like that. It's an awesome movie. I saw, like, the rated R version, I guess, because that's all you could rent right now. But I liked it enough that I pre-ordered the 4K uncut. So
nice.
Yeah, Possessor's cool, man. Should have mentioned it.
Yeah, I have it ready to watch. So
you're waiting for that uncut?
No, I haven't rented. I just haven't got to it yet.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it, I think.
All right. Well, let's jump into our triple feature here. I picked Black Christmas.
All of them.
All of them. yes. So the 1974 version, I've never seen any of these, but the 1974 version is, highly regarded now, was not maybe at the time that that it came out. 2006 and 2019, a little bit less so. go ahead.
I had only half seen the first one before this. I had watched the first one on Joe Bob, like the last drive-in, but I was pretty deep in the beers watching it, so it was like half watch. I'm like, did I miss some stuff? And then rewatching again now, I'm like, I guess I didn't, because
not yeah, we're a lot. Into that. Yeah. That's kind of my experience with this film as well. I did not watch it with Joe Bob, and I was not drinking watching it either, but
remember those idyllic scenes out of your childhood? Crisp winter nights, star bright, sleigh bells, crackling Yule logs, candlelight glistening off of shimmering Christmas trees, chestnuts roasting over open fires, carolers beneath snow covered window ledges. Remember those? Remember them well. After Black Christmas, they'll never be the same again. Black Christmas, starring Olivia Hussey, Keir Dulley, Margot Kidder, and starring John Saxon as Lieutenant Fuller. If this movie doesn't make your skin crawl, it's on too tight.
Yeah, so Black Christmas, 1974, directed by Bob Clark. Starring Olivia Hussey, I think that's her name, Keir Duella, Margot Kidder, John Saxon. It released October 11th in 74, about 100-minute film. Budget of $620,000, and it brought in $4.1 million at the box office. So not bad.
Yeah, pretty good, yeah.
For what it is, it is generally, it's, I guess it's considered kind of a proto slasher.
Yeah,
if you consider Halloween as the start of the slasher genre. This took place 4 years before, and there's definitely, you could see some inspiration in, like, from this film pulled into Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Considered
a classic.
Yeah. Yes.
Largely now, because of those proto slasher elements.
Yeah.
People genuinely love this movie, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're one of
them. So I guess we'll jump right into, like, kind of what the plot here is.
Yeah.
It takes place in a sorority house, and there is a killer in the house at Christmas time that is placing obscene phone calls and then killing off the sorority girls one by one. You never really see the killer. It's kind of done from the side. The kills in it aren't very, not very graphic. It's a 1974 film. You're not going to show a lot at that point. There's a lot of characters, a lot of girls in this. Too many to keep track of. Margot Kidder, though, was a standout for me. And it, one, because kind of know who she is, right? Like, Lois Lane. She also plays she's drunk all the time, and brazenly so. Like, she is supposed to be a college student. And she's just walking around with, like, a bottle of whiskey. She's drinking at the police station. Like, she's always has a drink in her hand, and I believe that maybe she was drunk the entire filming of this film by watching her performance here. I enjoyed her, she's great, but like, she definitely seemed drunk. And so there's this girl Jess. She has a boyfriend. They kind of paint the boyfriend is maybe being the killer. Like, they kind of point us down that direction.
That's kind of the only like suspect that the movie kind of points towards, right? Is this girl's boyfriend, this possessive kind of.
Yeah. And
boyfriend, like, guy.
Some weird stuff happens with, like, him showing up, like, in spots where maybe he shouldn't be. And he definitely has kind of, like, an anger issue. And,
crazy.
Yeah. But he's not it. Like, he's mostly a red herring.
Yeah, this is a huge problem I have with the movie. But yeah, also regarding him, though, is, like, there's this kind of... It's kind of like this feminist element of the film. It's not super in your face, but it's his girlfriend in it. I forgot her name already, but is that Olivia Hussey? I can't remember.
Yes, that's.
She finds out she's pregnant. She wants an abortion, and he does not want. If I recall, it's been a couple of weeks since I saw
it. Yeah, no, he's like, what about my feelings? Like, it's like very straight up. Like,
he's all against it.
Yeah, like, Christian conservative. Don't have abortion.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's important because I think, like, some of the themes in this original one get updated in one of the sequels in an interesting way. But it's kind of all that's going on here. It's a very... I'd say it's like a very slow, like, leisurely movie where it's like a lot of hanging out in a house, wondering, like, the inciting incident. I guess we should probably start at the beginning, is like this POV shot, right? That it starts with.
Yeah, it's very Halloween. Like, it's
the beginning is very much, Halloween very much took some cues from the beginning of this.
Where you see this guy, he's climbing the outside of the sorority house as the Christmas party's happening, and he kind of enters the attic. And then that's when we start the obscene phone calls start, and
then he does, like, the first kill pretty early on, like, in this opening, right? And that's who, like, that kind of, like, sets the story in motion of where is this girl? She went missing, and everyone's kind of waiting around this house hoping she'll show up or the police will find something, right? Like,
yeah. The kill's not very graphic, or, but I actually kind of like the look of it. Like, he kills her with she's, like, in the closet, she's looking around, and he kills her with this you know, dress bag, this bag that, you know, covers like a, you know, a dress or something, and just strangles her with that.
And it's just the iconic image of her with the bag over her head in the rocking chair. It's like, even if you haven't seen this movie, you probably know that image. I think it gets put on some of like the, I don't know if it's on the box art or posters or whatever, but like I do that image.
Yeah, it's straight up the poster of the film. Like,
I think one thing to note about that beginning, though, with that POV shot, it's kind of revolutionary filmmaking for its time. I mean, it was revolutionary when Halloween did it 4 years later, but when Halloween did it 4 years later, that was after the invention of the Steadicam. And I think Halloween might have been the first movie that did that, like use the Steadicam, or if not the first, one of the first. This was just figuring out how to do it without a Steadicam. Like, it was like he, like, you know, hooked it up to like a cart or whatever. Like, it was some inventive shit, and it's pretty like impressive too, because they got the camera to go up the side of this house, like this trellis or whatever on the side of the house. You know, whether you like the movie or not, I think it's pretty cool. Like, I don't know, kind of movie history we got going here, you know?
Yeah, definitely interesting and, you know, influential from a technical standpoint for early horror. But yeah, as you said, not much.
It's hard to run through the plot. Like, we usually run through the plot of these movies, and it's like, well, after that, not a whole lot happens, right?
Like, yeah, cause we've kind of run through, like, with the overview, we've kind of run through the plot. Like, as Jeff said, there's not a lot that really happens in this film. It's very leisurely. It's a little slow. You know, there's a lot of, like, going to the police station, and, oh no, our friend's missing, and back and forth. There's a dad that shows up, and like, he's just kind of around.
He's looking for the girl that's in the attic, right?
Yeah.
And there's some bit too with like, there's another girl that went missing, right? Like, and like the whole town is looking for her. It's kind of weird how that's like a subplot in this. And I'm assuming the killer killed that girl too, but she's not a character in the movie, right? Like, it's weird. Like,
there's a lot of holes in this story, including like the fact that they don't really reveal who the killer is.
Oh yeah, I knew we were gonna get to that. That's my big problem. That's my biggest problem with the movie. And it's not this. This is what Joe Bob said, but it's not me like stealing from him. I thought the same thing watching it. I'm just like, you spend the whole like, you're doing this slasher, like proto slasher, like mold, where it's like, early slashers were like a murder mystery. Who is the killer? Right.
Right.
And you spend the whole time pointing to one person and not even setting up anyone else who it could be. Like, it's just weird. Like, so it's like, it has to be him. Then it's not. And then it's just, we don't ever find out who Billy is. It's just a crazy guy in their attic. Like, we know nothing about him. I'm assuming we never really saw him in the movie.
No.
If he's supposed to be one of the other characters, like, the movie does nothing to point to anyone else. I think that's a big problem with the movie. Like,
so in terms of, you know, how the credits go in, and actually Billy's never actually credited directly. But Wikipedia kind of lists three people as playing Billy in the film. There's Billy, who's on the phone. There is Billy's shadow. So you do see like the killer coming up from behind, but you never see the killer. And then there's the guy who played the you know, the POV shot at the beginning.
Yeah.
But we're never really given who Billy is. We're never shown Billy. We're never given that release of, okay, Peter's not it. This is the guy. Like,
yeah.
Whether the killer is shown or not isn't like, well, actually, whether the killer is caught or not isn't really relevant, but I think we do need to know who the killer is, because the way the film ends is just like, okay, well, she's unconscious, she's in her bed, and the police are there, and Billy's in the attic, nobody's checked there.
Still.
But Yeah, and then the phone rings as kind of like it backs out, like I guess, like kind of to imply that Billy's still fucking with them, but
you know, and I'm not saying every horror movie has to explain the killer or has to reveal who the killer is. I'm not saying that at all. Like,
right.
take a movie like The Strangers. You never know who the fuck those people are or and what motivates them. But that's the point of The Strangers. That's what makes The Strangers scary. Right. This movie, you structure like a mystery, so the audience, we, are expecting to find out the identity of the killer at the end. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You've set us up for the type of movie that you're delivering, but then the ending, you don't satisfy that type of movie. Like it's,
and it, I think it's, you know, it's sin here is even worse because they set up Peter as the fall guy.
Yeah. Like they totally play it as this murder mystery. And you think it's going to be this one guy. It's not. And then it's like, but who is it? Like you want to know at the end
and then it's over. It's like, yeah. Okay. So like I dozed off watching this film. So I was like, I think I missed something. So I like went back because like I watched the ending, but I was like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Like something they had to show something in like the you know 5-10 minutes I dozed off, and it's not there.
I don't know. I don't hate the movie, but that is my big thing with it. Like, that's my problem with that fucking movie. And that, and boy, oh boy, this movie's tame. Like, there is...
Sorry.
I mean, and it's weird because it's an R-rated movie. The language is absolutely foul, you know? The obscene phone calls are chilling. I think that's one of the pluses of the movie. I think it's the phone calls. But he'll be like, call him, I want to see your pretty pink cunt, or you know, like,
oh, yeah,
like super R-rated dialogue and stuff, but like the kills, there's no kills. Like the most graphic kill I think is with a glass unicorn, like a stabbing, but it's not like it's not graphic at all. Like,
no, it's you know, there's very little blood. And not that like you need that in a horror film, but for a slasher film, and as we said, this is a proto slasher. You kind of are looking for the kills. Like that's what slashers have become known for. Is like, how does Michael kill them? How does Freddy kill them? How does Jason kill them? In this, it's like, all right, the kills aren't there, and then the mystery is like, there's a good mystery here, but then it doesn't pay off.
So. Yeah, and you know. It's not like the first Halloween is super violent or anything, but it has kills. It has like excitement. Like Halloween is just expertly constructed too. It's like a great suspense thriller. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just give me something, man. And there's things I like about the movie for sure. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, the phone calls, I love me and my girlfriend both love the fucking like house mother in this movie. Who's like,
she's really good.
She's constantly, like, she has bottles of booze hidden in every fucking corner of the sorority house, and she's just constantly drinking. Like, her and Margot Kidder are just drunk through the whole movie. I like when Margot Kidder goes to the police station. I think she's the one that says, like, the fellatio joke.
Yep.
To the cop, and the cop that has no idea what the word fellatio means.
Yeah,
right before she gets like super drunk and I think it's told to go to bed, and she like sleeps through the second half of this movie. She's like talking about a turtle that could fuck for 3 days straight. Like I don't know, some of like the just hanging out parts and like those elements like of the movie, like the non horror-y stuff almost is like what I like about it. I don't know, like. I could see throwing this on around Christmas time. It's a good background movie. It's like, and it has like that old, like movie feel, like that kind of like cozy sweater feel to it. Like, it's just like, oh, I'm going to put this slow kind of boring thing on in the background. It has a little bit of a Christmas theme to it.
Yeah, and like as you're bouncing in and out doing other things, like you just catch scenes of it.
So I don't hate the that. I don't hate the movie. Like I like that kind of old classic feel to it. It just it feels like a cool like horror movie to throw on in December. Like I'm definitely this is not gonna be the last time I'm watching Black Christmas, but I also like agree with like everything you're saying about it. Like the two things that like for me, like I said, was there's not no good kills and the ending is super unsatisfying with the identity of the killer. I'm not surprised that like those are your big complaints too, because that's me, you, Joe Bob, we all kind of say the same thing on this one. He's not in love with this movie by a long shot.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I don't think I'll be returning to it unless, like, it's in an instance like that where it's like, all right, well, man, there's fucking nothing else. Like, put it on the corner while I'm, like, you know, cooking something or you know. It's competently made for the most part outside of the, you know, the narrative issues. Like, you know, as we said, like, technically, like, they did some really cool shit here. I just mostly it's kind of dull for me.
Oh, you know what? One part I liked was like when the police are aware of what's going on and they're like trying to get this guy to call, and the scene is like edited pretty cool where it's like they're trying to keep this guy on the phone as this guy, and it cuts to this guy at like a cop or whatever at the phone company just running around these like stacks, like I don't know what the fuck, the way phones used to be set up, like trying to figure out where the call is coming from. I thought that was cool, like that part was like well edited.
Yeah, and this does play off of that like the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah,
the line that is used, like I thought that was kind of cool. Like I don't know if this is the first time that is used.
Right. Either, but, I don't know either. Some fun facts about the movie that this is stolen from Joe Bob, but I thought these were interesting enough to write down. This was Elvis's favorite movie. Steve Martin saw the movie 27 times in the theater.
Huh.
So the movie had its fans when it first came out, but according to Joe Bob, it didn't really become a cult classic for many years until around the year 2004. And sadly, Bob Clark died a couple years after that. He and his son got in a car accident, and they both died. And in fact, a lot of the I would nominate this film as a movie to use for cursed films, like you know that show Cursed Films on Shudder. I think for season two, they should do Black Christmas because the way Bob Clark went out is pretty fucking gruesome. And Margot Kidder had lived a very tragic life after this film. So after this and Lois Lane and stuff.
Yeah, I mean.
Like her life ended very fucked up.
She definitely had, but anyways, she had some kind major, of major mental issues. So.
You get a lot of those details if you watch the Last Drive-In version of this. Like, he just goes into way deep detail on her tragic life. But these are just fun facts.
Yeah. So then it was I guess then it's on to the next Black Christmas film.
Well, we got to rate it. We got to rate. Where are you at?
Yeah, we do have to rate them. I'm going to give it a, let's see, a 4 out of 10.
Okay. I thought you were going to say 2.
I was doing my normal scale of out of 5, and it would be a 2 out of 5.
The original, again, I have major, major problems with it. It's not a beloved classic for me. Like, I didn't grow up with it. It's new to me. But I like it. I'll be seeing it again, despite the very big issues I have with it. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
All right. So welcome back from our slight break there after Black Christmas 1974. You may notice there's different audio quality this time around. we unfortunately lost our audio for the next two films, and we are re-recording it currently. So we are now at Black Christmas 2006.
15 years ago, on Christmas Eve, his family became his victims.
What have you done?
Are officially closed. This one is not gonna let up.
A group of college friends.
That sucks. Everyone should be home for Christmas.
Are about to discover.
Lauren, we're opening up presents.
Why don't you open the present we got you?
Their house.
I got it.
Is his home.
All is calm. All is bright. Who is in my house tonight?
Don't you have lots of toys to deliver to good little boys and girls?
You really shouldn't provoke somebody like that.
22 years after... 32 years after the original film came out. This is a remake, kind of, in a way. It basically follows the same platform here. Directed by Glenn Morgan. Starring a who's who of 2000s female actors, Michelle Trachtenberg, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Lacey Chabert. You've seen these ladies around in that time period if you've been watching movies or television.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm always happy to see Winstead. Didn't know she was in this, so that was a nice surprise for me.
Yep. Budget of $9 million. And worldwide final box office of $21.5 million, so it made a profit. Not a gigantic take, but it made some money here. Did not review particularly great. Kind of holds a 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. We will get into it because this is kind of considered, I guess, retroactively, one of the better ones in the series.
I think by some.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the people I follow, but, you know, I feel like this one is gaining in popularity, especially after the one we're going to get to, the 2019 one.
Yep. And this one does, like, we're going to get into it, but this one does some things better than the original film. So, all right. So, basic plot is kind of the same here. It's a group of sorority girls in a sorority house that ultimately end up getting killed. This one, though, however, answers pretty immediately one of the questions we had in the last film. That being, who is the killer?
Yeah, it's like shown right up front. There's no mystery, so the mystery element's removed from this remake.
Yeah,
right, like right up front it's like there's this guy, he killed his whole family, and now he's like, when he was a kid or something, and now he's like in this insane asylum. He killed his whole family at Christmas, and you know, his name's Billy, and you're like, okay, well, Billy was the killer in the original, so this is the guy, and we just learned everything about him up front. But it turns out, like, the movie, this remake, it overcorrects the problem of the first one. So, like, the problem in the first one was that, like, there was no identity to the killer. And I think I kind of explained it when we originally recorded this, that, like, the problem with that in the original is that, like, it's set up as a mystery movie, and then it has no, like, mystery reveal at the end. It doesn't solve it.
Yeah.
And here, it's just, like, you get everything up front, and you think that's going to be it, but no. This remake is going to spend almost 50% of its running time letting you know all about Billy and his insane, like, incestuous backstory that they've, like, filled out for him in this one. So, anyway, sorry to...
Yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty much it, right? Like, it goes into the killer's backstory. This is a Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween with the killer kind of here being revealed so much. And that's fine, I guess. Like it adds a little bit more to this because it's a short movie, and without that, this is a really really short movie because it's about a third of the film, at least maybe even more.
It felt like we were always going back to Billy's upbringing and learning more and more crazy shit.
Yep. So like early on, like they're at the insane asylum, kind of learn the backstory. It cuts to the cuts to the sorority house. We start meeting the girls there, and then there's an escape, right, from Billy at the insane asylum. Some interesting stuff there. It's fine.
You get a candy cane kill.
Yeah, which is good. Like that, it's inventive enough. Like it's fits the theme kind of.
There's that. It's fitting the theme, and also it's early indication that this one's going to have kills in it. It's going to actually play like a slasher movie.
Yeah,
and I would say, you know, not to spoil anything we're going to say about the third one, but it's like this is the only one in the whole three Black Christmas versions that like. That has any sort of like amount of violence, in my opinion. Like the first one has like almost nothing, like almost no.
Yeah,
you know, it's like kind of the flaw for me. It's like there's nothing going on here. It's like it's sane, and we'll get into some of the. You know, there's some crazy fucking kills and shit going on in this. So
yeah, I mean, it does tie back to the original. There's the plastic bag strangling kill. But there's like iconic moments that they pulled. Well, I wouldn't say iconic moments, but they definitely pulled things that you may remember from the first film and tied them in here. So yeah, they're sitting around the girls are all sitting around the fire there at the sorority house, and the house mother is giving out presents, and that's when we start to get the backstory on Billy. Because I think it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character. She drew Billy as the
Like
one of them has to give Billy a gift every year. It's like, haha, give the guy who killed everyone in this house a gift.
Yeah, and it's really an excuse for, because like unlike the first one where it's like. We spent a lot of time sitting in the sorority house in the first one, but it's because people are worried about someone who's gone missing. And here it's just like they're just sitting around getting drunk before Christmas and talking about, like, you know, this brings up the subject of Billy because he's part of the Secret Santa thing that they do or whatever. And then they like gives them an excuse to like, oh yeah, let's tell the story of Billy. You know what I mean? It's like that's how we're getting all these fucking flashbacks.
And so, yeah, that story of Billy is that he was a kid that had, well, they call it, like, they kind of paint it that he was, like, disfigured and had, like, this horrible disease. He had jaundice.
Yeah, like, they explain it as, like, a rare skin disease that makes the skin yellow. And my girlfriend was like, you mean jaundice? it's just weird how they described it, like, you know.
Common disease that, like, half of babies get.
But, is it really that high?
It's up there, like it's. Yeah. I'm not a medical professional. I don't know the stats on it, but it is definitely something like they warn you about, like when you bring your baby home.
Yeah,
like,
hey, yeah.
You know, keep an eye on this. Evidently, because of the jaundice, the mom hates the kid. She hates her husband, and ultimately, she's having an affair with some dirtbag and kills the dad. Which is witnessed by Billy. He finds them trying to bury the body underneath the house. And then he crawls around the house for whatever reason, which gives, you know, that sets up the idea that the killer can move around the house without having to walk through hallways and doors. And like there are secret entrances, throughout the house. And somehow ends up in the attic, and they lock him in, which doesn't make sense because he's able to crawl around anyway. And then leave him up there for, like, what? 9 years? Like, I think it goes from, like, 1975 is when... Okay, no, 1975 is when they kill the dad. and he's like, I don't know, 8 or so then. And then 7 years later in 82 is when Billy's mom decides to fuck Billy because her boyfriend fell asleep.
Yep.
Which impregnates Billy's mom. And so 9 months later, we have a baby, Agnes.
Agnes, baby Agnes, yeah.
And that causes the events that ultimately ended up with Billy being locked away because he disfigures Agnes, kills his mom, kills his stepdad, I guess, and then decides to use the flesh of his mom to make cookies and eats them. And Agnes is kind of taken to, you know, wherever you take kids that are left by themselves when their family is murdered.
Yeah, and him, like, making the cookies out of his mom's skin is a great example of, like, this movie is, like, you know, the first movie had, like, no violence. This one's just, like, who gives a shit? It's never, like, it's not, like, super gory or, like, it's never presented as, like, over the top and horror. Like, it's never, like, how do I mix it? This movie's silly, so, like, yeah. there's crazy violent deaths and kills in it, but it's, like, all super tongue-in-cheek and, like, having fun with it. But, like, this is a perfect example. This is one that grossed out my girlfriend. But, yeah, he, like, cuts her skin off with cookie cutters, like, little gingerbread men and shit. And he fucking bakes cookies out of the skin,
yeah.
And he fucking dips them in milk and eats them, and they like do close up shots of like him eating the milky fucking skin, like, you know, pretty gross. But I loved it. Like, spoilers. I, on my opinion on this movie, I had a lot of fun with it. It's bad, but I had a lot of fun. So, anyways,
yeah, and that's kind of the thing. Like, that's like, there are fun moments like that, and the kills are kind of good. But everything else kind of, like, around it is pretty bad. Like, all the acting, despite the talent that they have.
It's a good cast, but their performances are terrible. And, you know, part of that is also, like, the dialogue they have to read is just awful.
It's like, bad. It's not good at all. They, like, they make Mary Elizabeth Winstead, like, some Southern belle whose dad is a race car driver or something. And she's giving the worst Southern accent ever.
Like, the acting is almost, I hate to say it, it's, like, almost as bad as, like, a porno. Back when pornos, like, had like, actual scripts and they, like, tried to act in them. It was just, you know, I feel shitty saying about people that I think are good in this. Like, you know, like, Winstead or Lacey, what's her name?
Chabert, yeah. Yeah.
Chabert. You know, I think, you know, she's part of Mean Girls. It's a great movie, right? Like, they're just, everyone's bad here. Everyone is giving a terrible performance. And they're, because I think largely having to read stupid lines. But
so then, like, then all of a sudden the film just kind of switches. And, you know, they kill off a bunch of the sorority girls pretty quickly. And we end up, like, very early on. You know, maybe about an hour in, where it seems like we're reaching the climax of this film. Like, you know, they're running through the attic and shit's burning, and this is all because it sets up like a secondary ending that felt very unnecessary. Actually, like, everything probably should have happened in the house, but they end up going to the hospital, and there's a whole like 15-minute hospital scene. That drags out with the final two survivors.
Yeah, and it really does feel like after the end of the movie, it's because it's like, you know, the survivors have gone to the hospital and the dead bodies of, oh, we'll get into the twist there. The killer is at the hospital and like they spring to life and start killing everybody.
Right.
And there's a twist to the identity of the killer too. You know?
Yeah, to where we think it's Billy killing everybody. It turns out it's actually his sister daughter, Agnes, the one with the fucked up eye.
And him.
They're doing it together, and that's the reveal in the house, is that there are two of these people, and dad and daughter have linked up to go on a killing spree.
And it explains why so many of the kills in this are ripping people's eyeballs out, because that's what happened. That's what Billy did to her when she was like a baby or whatever, a little kid.
Yeah.
So she's like disfigured, and I guess, you know, she has an obsession with doing that to people, I guess. With
getting the eyeballs. Yeah.
Yeah, but it does ending the, like the last, you know, 15 minutes or so, or 20, whatever it is. It does feel like it's just one of those things that happen in a movie sometimes where you're like, oh, I thought this movie was over. And it's like, no, there's a whole other act. And that's how it feels here.
Yeah. And like, it's the hospital stuff's fine. I think it actually ends with a decent kill.
Yeah, it's totally fine. It's just, I was like, oh, I was ready. All right, we're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
Nope.
And okay, we're still going. And
yeah.
Oh, Agnes is here. She's gonna do another kill, and Billy's here too. Great. They kill Agnes with a defibrillator, which I always find funny because you can't do that. it can't be used as a weapon, despite what we like. It's used to shock your heart and get it back on track, but it is not like an open current. So I always find it funny when we use defibrillators to kill people. and
movie magic, baby.
Yeah. You got to suspend your belief all the time. So, and then, you know, Billy is chasing around the final survivor, and he ends up going over a railing and being impaled on the top of a Christmas tree, which is pretty awesome. Like, I actually like that one pretty good, so.
Yeah, and then that's it, right? That's fucking credits roll and
everything.
And yeah, I kind of already said how I feel about this movie. Like, I loved it. Like, I had so much fun with it. Like, I can't believe this thing was like a theatrical release and actually did 20 million, because it feels like those really fun straight to video horror movies you'd get in the 90s. And like the whole time I'm watching, it's just so silly. Like, the movie knows it's silly and knows that its writing is not good, and it fully is embracing it and just like, let's have fun. And yeah, like the whole time I'm watching it, I was like, I would totally do a double feature of this, and I probably will next year, like around Christmas time. I'll do this followed by Jack Frost, because they're both, you know, there's no connection between them, but they're both like the same vibe of just silliness and knowing that they're bad, and they're both Christmas themed, so like they would just pair together so well. That's all I kept thinking. I really enjoyed this
stupid fun. Yep. I could see doing that. They are dumb enough that you kind of keep on in the background and or have fun with, like, if you're watching with some other people, like they're that stupid that you can enjoy it that way. Yeah, it's fine. Like, it is definitely more violent than its predecessor. It improves on some of the things, overcorrects, as we said, in many ways. But I think ultimately it is a more enjoyable film than 1974, which is a little slow and ends terribly. All right. Where are we at with a rating, Jeff?
I would not say it's better film than 74. I think it's a bad film, but I enjoy it. So like, my rating lands like, you know, I'm telling you, I love this movie. I would actually own this movie. I'd be happy to have it on Blu-ray. But I recognize it's not a good movie. So my rating lands actually the same as I believe I gave 1974's version. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
I'm not going that high, but I kind of agree with you, and I think 74 is a better film. Like, it's just better acted, in many ways better shot. But this is just more fun, and I'm going to end up on the same score as I did for the original with a 5.
Which leads us
with Black Christmas 2019. They love leaving giant gaps in between these films.
I think it's like, it's not really not really a series, and it's not really like, it feels like something that someone every 20 years decides, let's try to make this a franchise and let's try to reboot it. And it just,
and like you can't, like, they're right. Like, cause like,
as, you know, 2006
is a standalone, 1974 is a standalone. Although they do leave it open. Like the killer is in the attic still in, at the end of 74.
Hey, what if you did a straight sequel to 74? That's not been tried yet.
They never found the actual killer again. That would actually have worked for 2006, right? Like, they could have tied it in that way. 2019, completely different film, though.
There's someone in the house.
Has 200 years of history. Many sacrifices have been made to keep our traditions alive.
You're all insane.
I'm tired of hiding. I'm tired of running. Go, 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 go!
Ho, 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 bitch.
You mess with the wrong sisters.
Directed by Sophia Takal, released December 13th, 2019, 92 minutes long, starring Imogen Poots and Carrie Ells. Budget of $5 million, ultimately ended up with a box office of $18.5 million. And to note, I believe it reviewed better. It did. It holds a 39% on Rotten Tomatoes, but Jeff, I think you have something that that you said in our first recording of the discussion of this. It's like it has breached the top 100 worst films on IMDb.
Yep, yeah, it cracked the top 100, which I think is, I don't know.
We'll get into that.
But it just goes to show you though that there was a very negative reaction, like. Despite it reviewing better than the 2006 one that nobody remembers, when this 2019 one came out, like, people that did see it,
I hated it.
Seemed to really, like, there was a thing on Twitter, and we'll get into, like, when you get into what this is.
Yeah.
I thought it was for one reason. We'll get into
it. I think it is probably for both. Yeah, let's get into that. So yeah, this is it still follows some sorority girls. It still is about a sorority house and those girls being murdered on, around Christmas. But it takes a different approach to that. Completely different approach this time. So the first, like, I don't know, half of this film sets it up as something else. Like, it is very much a story about this girl, Lindsay. No, not Lindsay. Lindsay is the girl that is killed on the way home at the beginning. It's about this girl, Riley, who she was raped on campus by a frat guy. She was drugged and raped. And she is still part of the sorority. She's still doing sorority things, and her sorority is going to this frat's house, and they have written a song to perform there.
They're doing like a talent. It's supposed to be like a talent show type thing. Yeah. You know, like, frats and sororities always are doing these stupid fucking
mixers and dumb like.
Like, it sounds like a real thing. That would, yeah. And the other thing is, like, I think it's suggested that it's been like a year. Like, it was like last Christmas this guy fucking raped her.
Yeah, because right? he has seemingly, he has graduated and moved on, but he is coming back for this event. He nothing happened to him. She was kind of viewed as like consensual, although she pertains that it did not. That it was not consensual, and
so she is kind of hated by this fraternity, obviously by those guys. And then there's like a sub theme where another sorority sister is waging war against a professor, an English professor, that she thinks is misogynist, and has kind of put up a petition to have this guy removed and fired from the campus. So there's definitely some strong feminist energy, which, you know, relates back to that original film. Was something that was missing from the last one.
I think, like, in some ways, like, the writers of this are trying to, like, they're doing their own thing that is not beholden to the Billy slasher thing, right?
Yep.
But they're also, like, it feels like they thought about how to update the themes of the original film and, like, pay some homage, like, thematically, or, you know, or spiritually, whatever. Where it's like, okay, in that first movie, it was kind of about, it had a feminist message about abortion. How can we update that to today? And, you know, you have that sorority, the college setting. It's like perfect to do, like campus rape culture, right?
Yeah.
And early on in this movie, as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, that's why the internet like hated this, because it's trying to be feminist, and I'm sure that was a huge part of it. Like you said, like, I'm sure a huge part of the audience that hates this movie is because it even attempted to do that. And so and I wasn't hating, like, I was kind of into the movie in the first half hour.
I think it's actually done very well.
It's like, pretty good. And we'll get into like that the song that they do. Yeah, like, so at this point, right, as they're about to do the song and stuff, I'm like, I'm not hating this. I don't think it's amazing, but I'm like, this is kind of well done, and I'm more interested than I expected to be. And I'm telling myself, oh, everyone hated this because it was trying to be feminist, and it's actually not that bad.
Right.
That's what I was telling myself.
So Riley, she is not supposed to be one of the singers in this. She goes looking for the fourth singer, and finds her just about to be sexually assaulted by a member of the frat. Kind of intervenes, takes her away. Helena is drunk, like, and not in a good place. And so she moves her out of there, and then she steps in for this this performance at the talent show, where they get up and I forgot the song, but it's like kind of it's based on a Christmas song, right? Like,
yeah, I forgot.
But it's like very sing-songy. You kind of know, like, you know the music, you know, like, it feels familiar, but they've changed the words to kind of blast this fraternity, the guy in particular that had raped her, and they call it out right on stage, like at right in front of them. And like, it's ballsy. It's a fun, catchy song. Yeah.
I love that scene. And like, at that point I'm like, okay, this is what really pushed people's buttons.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, I liked it. Like, I thought it was like, I was like, this movie's clever. The writing in this movie is clever. This is going to be better than people said. And I like Imogen Poots, you know. And I'm like, so I'm like, at this point, I'm like, wow, this is way better than I've been told.
Yep.
And I'm into it. You know, and part of it was that song. Like, I was like, that's just pretty clever.
So then we're starting to get, you start, after the performance, you start to kind of get hints that, like, you know, something's going to go bad, right? Like, the girls are starting to get texts from the founder of the college they're at. It's this guy who's long been dead. They're like getting texts on this messaging app there, and so we start to kind of like, all right, is it the rapist? Is it that guy? Or is it this new guy that's just been introduced? He's kind of this dorky kind of, he likes Riley, but maybe he's the killer. They start playing around with, giving us suspects to think. So like, the mystery angle seemingly is being brought back. And something we didn't talk about at the frat house is that, like, Riley kind of sees something going on where they're inducting these frat boys into the frat. And in doing so, there's this, like, weird statue bust of the founder.
The Hawthorne guy, the founder of the college. And his black goo, like, oozing out of it.
Which then
saying black goo just makes me.
but you can almost like buy into like the fraternity induction that way, right? Because like they're secretive, they're weird, they do like weird things. They pour like
some
that.
Oil onto this thing, and it's part of like their weird.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. But like, God, we're getting to it.
Yeah. So it's starting to play up this mystery angle, and then all shit starts to break loose in the house. A killer shows up and starts offing the girls. We get the kind of the callbacks to the previous films with the plastic bag kill. There's a unicorn. And there's like a couple other things that maybe show up. It's fairly tense when this killer originally shows up.
I'm still having fun at this point.
Yeah, it's turned into a slasher film at this point, right? The slasher is stalking them, killing them with a bow and arrow, which is an interesting weapon to utilize, especially for somebody kind of stalking somebody. Like, it's a hunting.
And it's like weapon. Inside of a house. Like, yeah, it's not a close range type of.
So it's
you're inter- 5 foot away from someone.
Interesting enough. You can pull that back. You get enough force on it, you're gonna hurt somebody. So it's like, you know, the girls are then running around the house and trying to escape this killer. They finally start to kind of move the other way and get out, and that's when the black goo shows back up. And there's more than one killer. Right, we learned that there's another killer.
Yeah, like they like off. I forgot who does it, but they off. It might have been Poots, like offs like the guy, right? You know, and it's like this, you know, mask and cloak dealy they're doing in this one. That's how the killer dresses. She kills him, and then another one shows up right away, like immediately at the other door. And you're like, at that point, I'm still like, this is cool. And oh, we're doing a little Scream thing here. You think there's one killer? But it's actually two friends or something, right?
Right,
like,
and you're
ripping
still
off this, Scream.
Yeah, you're still at this but point still, going
like whatever.
Is it like, who is it? Is it the professor? Is it the new guy? Like, has he been doing something behind the scenes? Is it the frat boys? Like, and when we see that there's more killers, it does seem like maybe it's the frat, right? That has come to exact revenge for this song. But then it all comes back to the black goo.
Yeah.
that black goo, which should be blood, isn't necessarily blood.
There's a point where we're driving in a car, right? Yeah. And it's like, I think it's Poots and one of the other girls, right? And like out of nowhere, I think Poots has like this fucking explanation for what's going on. And I hate when movies do this, where it's like, how would the character know to even think that? Like, it makes no...
Yeah, I mean, she...
No sane person in real, like, is going to believe that and actually think... You know what I mean? It's like, you're putting together what the plot wants you to put together, but you have, like, nothing to... All she, like, has the base on is she saw black goo. Like, I don't know.
It's right. She saw black goo at the fraternity house. She saw black goo from the guys that are trying to kill them. And instead of trying to, like, solve this by going and getting the police involved or anything, she, like, flips out and heads for the fraternity house.
Sorry to interrupt, but, like, in this scene where this is happening, where she's starting to go, oh, maybe it's something supernatural, and oh, like what we should do is go there, and like I think the idea is to like, I don't know, just investigate what.
It doesn't make any sense why they want to go there. None of
like as this is happening is when like it all falls into place for me, and it falls off a cliff, and I'm like, oh no, this thing is actually terrible. Oh no. Like, it was like this sinking feeling of, I was going like the whole time, I'm like, this is not as bad. Like, yeah, there's no really good kills. Like, it's not as violent as I would like.
So what was it, the black goo and the zombie frat boys that really did it over for you?
Absolutely. Like that, and, you know, just like I said, like her being able to jump to that conclusion, like no person would jump to that conclusion without more things pointing toward that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's, she's like piecing the things together that only a character in a script could, because the script wants her to do it.
Yeah, they definitely should have given her more. I don't necessarily hate it because of that. I don't hate it.
It's just on top, anyway, like, but it's just like everything at that point. Yeah, the black goo, dude. Like, it's just,
dumb.
It's just, it didn't feel like a supernatural movie. Like, and then all of a sudden it is. And what it is, like, pledge zombies. Like, it's just stupid. Like, and it's not, like, the 2006 one is, like, being stupid and knowing it's being stupid. And this
doesn't,
like,
know. This one doesn't know it's dumb.
I don't think it does. I don't think it knows. I think I said last week when we recorded this initially, I was like, it seemed like one person wrote the first half of the script, and then someone wrote the second, and it was written by two writers, but I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but like, to me, it's like, that's when I started to really turn on this movie, and nothing it did after that.
It gets really, really
dumb.
It gets
worse for me. It gets worse and worse.
But yeah, so I guess, like, as we're, and I skipped ahead a little bit, is while we're still back in the original sorority house, we do get a call in that, you know, there is some sort of home invasion going on at one of the sorority houses. We don't tie which one it is, though. And so there's these competing back and forth scenes where we're seeing the cop go to the sorority house. We're seeing what's happening in our sorority house. And then ultimately when the cop busts through, he gets killed, but when the cop busts through, we find out that it's a different sorority house. So this is being spread all over campus, is these frat zombies. But yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just thinking, it's like, it just feels supernatural out of nowhere. And I guess, like, there's hints early on, like there's like the black, the goo coming out of the bus, like in the first 15 minutes, right?
They don't give any indication that black, like, yes, the black goo obviously means something.
It means something, yeah.
But like, what would give anybody the impression that the spirit of the racist, sexist,
founder
of the college would be able to inhabit like people by rubbing this goo on them.
And it's just, I don't know. And even if the movie was like giving you kind of clues the whole time that's supernatural, like if you want to argue that, it's like stupid. It's silly, and it like is such an on the nose way to deal with the message that the movie's trying to do.
I think it would have been far more interesting.
You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah,
it's not clever. It's the opposite of what I thought it was at first. I thought it was pretty smart. Like I said, the song is smart writing. Like, it's just stupid. Like,
I think it would have been far more interesting if they had just gone the route of the frat, like the rapist frat member and some of his close friends, like, are looking to get revenge for their reputations being ruined.
And not do the supernatural, make it more about that.
Well, not do the supernatural. Like, completely, just, like, get rid of the Hawthorne.
I would have, in a rewrite.
And you could even tie it into Cariel's character, the professor. Like, he could be in on it with the rapist character and maybe a couple other frat boys.
And you could even tie it into, like, the history of the school, too. Like, you know, have someone say, like, this is how it's always been done. This is how the frats, we always control the fucking society. Yeah. You know, whatever. Like, it doesn't. And that's both true and then not the dumb supernatural element. And again, it's just like, it rubs me so wrong. Like, it's just stupid. Like,
it's really dumb. Like, I'm not going to lie. I kind of had fun with the stupidity of it. Like, just the audacity to go so goofy wrong.
I think it's a type of thing that it was like the deal breaker for me. But if the rest of the movie had actually been more provocative, like more like, if it had like awesome gory kills throughout the whole movie, and then like, you had this off the rails ending, I might be singing this movie's praises. Like, so like, it's not just that the story goes in that direction. It's that
it's tame.
Part of
it's,
a bigger whole.
It's,
yeah.
It's too tame. Yeah. And that's an issue with, you know, it being PG-13 and not R rated, which is a weird way to go with a movie about rape culture. You would think you would want to go not to show anything like that, but definitely with language.
Just people and, talk about things more. Like, which it gets away with a lot of the rape subject matter in it just fine with the PG-13.
Yes.
Like, they do that by like making the violence pretty tame. It's mostly like shooting arrows.
Yep, and like you don't get anything up close, you know? And
no super good kills. Yeah. So it's like the combination of like those two things, honestly, for me. It's just and another thing too, like, I don't know how close you are to the end here, but it's just like from the car ride to the end, it feels like it happened so fast to me. Like, I felt like the movie was just getting started, and then this stupid element is introduced.
It's
and then it's over. Like, you know, and there's like this goofy adventure shot of them all lining up like, fuck you boys, we're gonna get you and kill you, and then it's like over. Like, it's so quick. Like, it just feels like, I don't know, whatever, we're turning this in because it was due. Like,
yeah, there as Jeff said, there's this giant kind of ultimate battle between the sororities and the frats, where they just battle at it with chairs and frying pans and knives and whatever they have at their disposal, ultimately locking all the evil frat people and the Carrie Ells, who's kind of the mastermind of this whole thing. They lock them in this hall and burn the place down. And then it's over. Almost over, because then for this film feels the need to throw in a mid-credit sequence to hint at a possible sequel, or just kind of give us the knowledge that the spirit of Hawthorne is still out there as a cat eats the black goo.
Yeah.
I would watch a killer cat movie though.
I actually laughed at the cat. And maybe it's just kind of like them doing a gag, like a little joke, but like, you had lost my goodwill at that point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, oh yeah, I hear another fucking dumb thing in the credits. Like, yeah, it's just a combination. Like I said, the lack of the real good violence, the stupid turn the story takes, and then like how quickly it resolves all of that. I don't know. It felt like a,
yeah, it's really quick. It's
getting in the second half.
It's unfortunately, cause like, as we said, almost half the movie is spent on the setup of like the rape culture and misogynist angle to set up that feminist vibe. Then we get 20 minutes of running around in the sorority house, and then it's over. Like, there's another 10-15 minutes after that, and it's like the finale does. There's no time to actually build up to what they've set up. That it ultimately is a little disappointing.
Yeah, it really feels like the second half of the movie feels rushed. Like, it's just like, okay, we gotta finish this. Like, we weren't done writing the script, but we have to turn it in like by midnight. You know, like, it's just like, all right, it just ends. And it's like the whole thing's kind of unfortunate, because the setup, that beginning first act, I don't think it's like amazing, but like I think it is pretty good, and it's a pretty solid idea for an update on Black Christmas.
And the writing is pretty good. Like it's
in that part, yeah. And I like Imogen Poots, like, so, you know, again, didn't love the beginning, but I was like into it. Like I was into the story and not hating it. And then, like the rest of the movie kind of puts me on the side of actually some people I don't want to be on their side, but I'm just like, you know what I mean? It's just like, I hate to be like in the group with those people that hate this movie for the wrong reasons.
Well, I mean, you're yes, you're on the side of hating it, but you're not in that bubble where it's like, this is why I hate it. Like because it's not a good horror movie. It's a bad movie and it does bad things. And it had, and what's worse is there's potential for it to have been good and they squandered it.
Yeah. And with the angle, at least that the beginning of the movie takes, but I don't like the supernatural element. I think it's really silly and stupid. And, you know, all the things I've said, like, I'm repeating it over and over, but I think this is a pretty bad movie when it comes down to it.
It just doesn't pay off, but let's see for our listeners if our rating here pays off. Jeff, what are you giving Black Christmas 2019?
Again, I don't hate it. I don't think it's both not as bad as people made it out to be, but it's at the same time a pretty poor horror movie, especially when it, you know, like we were just saying, has kind of a cool setup at the beginning, but you know, you go from that cool beginning setup to by the end it's like embarrassing. And so my rating for the movie is 3.5.
Okay. I am actually a little bit lower than you on it, and I think I enjoy it a little bit more, but I am going to give it a 3. And that is it for Black Christmas 2019, which means it's time to find out which is the ultimate Black Christmas. Jeff, what did our poll state?
So Twitter poll came in. Didn't get a lot of votes, which surprised me because I think a lot of people have seen these movies. But it came out as 1974 version, the original, got 75% of the vote. And the 2006 version got 25% of the vote, which leaves the 2019 version with 0% of the vote. So if they have to, like, you know, if the Twitter poll has to break a tie, it's easily going to go to the original
version. Got it. And that brings it to us. I am going to go with Black Christmas 2006 as the better of the two films. Jeff, what say you?
Well, I'll try to act a surprise here, but mine is also 2006. Yeah, we already went over this in our Lost recording, but I think you and I have varying degrees of how much we enjoy 2006. Like, I really, like, I'm excited to watch 2006 again one day.
Yeah,
like
next Christmas. I'm not sure I'm excited to watch any of these ever again. I can see, I think you said it when we were talking about 1974, putting, like, that is a good background film because nothing fucking happens in it. I don't... I've come around on your idea of watching 2006 alongside something else stupid. So
do it with Jack Frost, I'm telling you.
But ultimately, my take is that Black Christmas as a series was a mistake.
Yeah, I think I kind of mentioned my overall feelings last week were I'm actually happy about your picks for this first Christmas episode because... One, I haven't really seen any of these movies, and two, I actually liked 2 out of 3 of them. Like, I liked the original. I liked the kind of the drunkenness going on in that one, and like you said, like, just a good background movie.
Yeah.
And the 2006 one is going to become maybe not an every year Christmas staple for me, but I will definitely... There will be Christmases in my future of watching that 2006 one, because I think it's a blast. And, so I'm happy with your picks for December.
And nobody is going to be watching 2019 again.
2019.
Yeah, nobody's watching that one.
Unless, you know, it's like some film class studying how to really fucking fuck up an opportunity that you've been given. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a distinct possibility.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you could do all sorts of fun things in a college course with that 2019 one. But that's probably the only place that people are really going to be having any fun with that.
So that brings us to next month, which will be delayed again a little bit. This was delayed for a variety of reasons to be coming out kind of middle of the month here. January will be a little bit late just because January 1st is New Year's Day. We are off the final 2 weeks of the year from podcasting, so we'll be getting you this early in January. But also my choices, and I am going to stick with movies that I have not seen, and the recurring nightmare-ish theme here is kind of getting stuck on your car in the winter, you know, somewhere where you can't necessarily get to help. So you are trapped in your car. It is freezing with no kind of way of escaping there. And the films that I have picked here are, it's a 2003 film called Dead End. And a 2007 film, this one starring Emily Blunt, called Wind Chill.
And you said those were, I know at least you said one of them was on Tubi.
Yep, so Dead End is on Tubi, and Wind Chill is actually free on Crackle. So
yeah, so if you want to watch along, we're making it really easy for you this month to do it.
Dead End free. Also free on Amazon Prime, evidently.
So, yeah, watch along. Check in with us next month. I think this is one that I don't think either of us have seen either of the movies. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I can't vouch for how great they are, how good they are. But IMDb rating for Dead End is 6.6. And Windchill is 5.8. And, you know, if you know anything about IMDb ratings, those aren't terrible.
No, yeah, like, and I remember looking them up on Letterboxd too, and like neither of them actually had terrible ratings. So, and it's weird too because you've chosen two movies that like I've never heard talked about ever, you know. And you could, there's so many horror movies, especially think about these days, like the last 5 years or so, yep. So many straight to video ones that are actually good that no one sees because it's just. There's so many movies that come out now.
Yeah, when 600 plus movies come out a year, it is hard to watch even a fraction of that. There are so many movies out there we haven't seen.
So it's like you're. I appreciate like cause some of the ones I have coming up. I have like some of my schedule planned for next year. It's like stuff that like people know and talk about. It's like maybe you or I have necessarily seen, you know, but like they're like cult classics and stuff like that. So I'm happy that you're picking some of these ones because you could sometimes pick these ones out of obscurity that are actually really cool. So,
I expect our Twitter poll to have a 0%.
Yeah, zero
voting.
It's not gonna be able to affect things. But so far, I think the Twitter poll like it had zero effect this month because we both went with 2006. I think the only time it's really changed anything was last month when it helped me take Mandy.
Yes.
As the winner.
Which I'm sure made you quite happy. So.
No, I'm sorry. I'm like gloating a little bit over here. Yeah.
So we'll be back in January, early January. Sorry for the delay in getting this one out there. Hope you enjoyed listening about Black Christmas, though. And, join us for freezing in the winter next year.
Yeah, and you know, I hope you know. I think by February we'll be caught up and back onto like our normal schedule. It's just the holidays right now, and of course, this episode, like you said, shit happens. So, anyways, Merry Christmas, enjoy your bad Christmas horror movies, and we'll be back, like you said, with more winter horror.
Yep.